Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR 96.3, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Well, this Black History Month, there is so much more for us to learn and explore about Black culture. And tonight, we're taking a moment to discuss building Black wealth. And our guest tonight is on a mission to do just that, not only building Black wealth, but eliminating debt. The two go hand in hand. And tonight we're going to talk about best practices, how to get on the roadmap to do that. If you have any questions, the phone lines are open. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight is Cedric Nash. He is an author. He is an entrepreneur. He is a financial mentor. He is an engineer. He's a little bit of everything. But tonight we're going to talk about sort of, as we said, wealth, debt, getting rid of it, and how to change the mindset specifically in the Black community. Cedric is the author of Why Should White Guys Have All the Wealth? How You Can Become a Millionaire Starting from the Bottom. Again, phone lines are open. Free advice, folks. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Cedric, welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Let's begin. First of all, last time you were here, we were talking about the Black Summit that took part on the campus, right off the campus of University of Maryland College Park. And I told you how I got in trouble, right, for not, we're talking about that off mic. I should have been there. I wasn't. So we got to fix that for the next one. I want to be there. Let's first back up and talk a little bit about that. I mean, we're going to get into your book and all that that's about, but the Black Summit that was held here in the DMV a couple of months ago was all about what we're talking about. You had a bunch of folks in there trying to figure out, right, how to tap in to that wealth gap and to narrow it. What was that like for you, and what was the feedback that you get from those who were there?
It was an amazing event. We had over 600 people in attendance. We sold out. We had Ayanla Van Zant, Angela Yee, Damon John, David Gardner from The Motley Fool. It was just absolutely incredible. The energy was really high. We had 66 different sessions about wealth building, and they were organized based on where you were in your wealth journey. So if you were just starting out, we had a track for people starting out. We had a track for people who were intermediate. We had a track for people who were advanced. The Motley Fool Ventures and Olin Douglas, they led a pitch competition where we gave out money to entrepreneurs who were getting started with their business ideas. We also had a college pitch competition where we gave money to college students who had business ideas. It was phenomenal. The people were so excited. The other interesting thing that was interesting was the outcomes were phenomenal. I'm hearing from some of the speakers who came and spoke that African-Americans took action. I have a buddy who owns 12,000 apartment doors and does syndications down in Florida. I personally invest with them as well. There are Black people who signed up and have invested in some of his apartment properties. You know, I saw wealth advisors who said that people were signing up. So it was a take action event. The beautiful thing about it, it was a nonprofit event. Our objective was not to promote anything, to sell anything. It was just to educate and inspire and encourage African-American wealth development, and I could say that we knocked it out the park.
You have mentioned in your book, and it's sort of in general, but you've mentioned in your book that 84% of the wealth in America, right, and you correct me if I'm, you know, sort of misrepresenting it, 84% of the wealth in America is held by white folks. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to help Black people get on a roadmap to sort of narrow that gap. And what I think is interesting about your book is the subtitle, How You Can Become a Millionaire Starting from the Bottom. Mm-hmm. And so many of us say, well, we're so far down here. How can I get to where Cedric is? Do I have to go to the Black Summit? So let's talk about sort of historical, how we are there at the bottom. Many of us kind of may know it, but in your research and your studies, how did we get there, and then how do we get there?
You know, how we got there was that historically, you know, African-Americans, we were wealth, right? And so if you look at the history, our history from the 1800s all the way through to today, we have dealt with more financial trauma than any community, from first being wealth to then being promised 40 acres and a mule by William Sherman
after the Civil War.
After the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Lincoln basically signed it into order, started dishing out 40 acres and a mule. And then Andrew Jackson becomes president. Lincoln's get killed, and they reverse the order and gives the land back to the Southern Confederates. More financial trauma. We go from there to the sharecropping era, right, to where African-Americans were working the land for white folks and only made enough money to feed their families. Mm-hmm. I know that all too well because my father is a son of a sharecropper, and he grew up as a sharecropper in North Carolina.
And folks need to remember, too, with sharecropping, it was really a vicious cycle because you were really renting the tools. You had to buy all of the supplies from the general store that was owned by the plantation owner, and you usually were buying that on credit.
Exactly.
And by the end of the season, they kind of made sure that you didn't break even. So if you owed, you had to stay on that plantation and keep working.
Right. So we couldn't build wealth.
So you couldn't build
so
wealth.
So you go on from there to 1920, Tulsa, Oklahoma, when we started building wealth. Mm-hmm. And then we know what happened there with the race massacre there. Right. Starting all over again. More financial trauma. We go from there to Jim Crow, where it was legal to discriminate against us institutionally in terms of education, in terms of financially, in terms of every aspect of life. It was legal to do so. Until the passing of the 1964 Civil Rights Act and the 1965 voting rights that allowed us to vote. So you go from there even to redlining, where they literally created, you know, this is history that we all know and all heard
sure.
about, where they created, you know, maps where they send a signal to financial institutions not to rent to or not to provide insurance or provide mm-hmm. loans to African Americans in those regions, ghettoizing our neighborhoods.
And folks should know, too, because you hear redlining a lot. What that they usually, they just took a red pen.
Yes.
And made lines around certain parts of that map and said, this section, black section,
yep.
don't loan.
Exactly.
If you want to loan, they're going to be high interest, all very
exactly.
disadvantageous.
So we go from redlining, you know, all up, I mean, from Jim Crow era, all the way up to, you know, we can keep going on and on and on, where we get to the 2007-2008 housing crisis. Where a county that you and I both live in Prince George's County, there are lots of African Americans who lost a significant amount of wealth because they were forced into subprime loans. Well, if you research it, a lot of African Americans who qualified for conforming loans were forced into subprime loans that were going to balloon. And, you know, at the mm-hmm. at the time that the housing market happened, now these loans come due, they can't pay it, and then they end up losing their houses and losing loads of wealth. Now you move that forward into 2022. Where 2023, we had the cryptocurrency bubble, where the research shows that African Americans who never invested a dime in the stock market was buying cryptocurrency. And we lost a significant amount of money. If you research it, you find African Americans disproportionately lost money in the cryptocurrency bust. And you have this housing valuation situation that we had even in 2022, where black homes were valued differently than white households. I know I'm going on and on and on about this, but the whole point is that there's no community that have dealt with as much financial trauma that our community has. And as a result of that financial trauma, our mindsets around money has been impacted. And there's a study that shows that, you know, adults who experience childhood trauma suffer from four things: relationship connections, cognitive issues, feelings of self-worth, and chronic health issues, right? That's the offspring of that trauma. As a result, it's affected our mindset by making us angry, making us frustrated, making us confused, making us desperate. And so how can you singularly be focused on building wealth when your mind constantly vacillates across all of those mindset things? And one that I didn't mention was fear. So I believe that we got a late start. We were held back. Now we're confused. Now we're set up to be taken advantage of because of the impacts of our trauma. And so now when we try to move forward investing, there's no solution. That's exactly why I wrote my book. I wrote my book because it is really the only personal finance book out there that is unapologetically focused on the African-American experience and provides solutions to changing your mindset, changing your value set, and showing you how you to make what I call make millionaire money moves, which is the accumulation of assets that appreciate and generate income over time.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight, Cedric Nash. He is the author of Why Should White Guys Have All the Wealth? How You Can Become a Millionaire Starting from the Bottom. Phone lines are open. Cedric, your appearance here tonight, you know, it really, you're right in the pocket of Vice President Harris was out at Bowie State University today. The governor was at Bowie State University today. Both historic figures, right? First black yes. female vice president, first black governor of the state of Maryland. And they were out there touting Vice President Harris, the Biden-Harris administration's new housing program in terms of getting low and first-time income, low-income first-time homeowners into the pipeline. And Governor Moore was talking about that. You know, he talked about his mother having to go to her parents, and they were able to give her money to try to, you know, get housing or I think get him into private school. And then, but he was just talking about the connection in housing. So they are trying to do more. And when you were talking about the trauma, and I wanted to ask you, is it now a combination of mindset and policy? Do you need policy to help black folks overcome so much that has held us back systematically? Because I know we can change our mindset, but do you also need policy such as what the governor and the vice president were talking about that they're trying to do from a state and national level?
The answer is yes. The short answer is yes, we do need them both. But the reality is we've been getting policies from, you know, the 8A programmed, you know, various programs that the government creates to try to make the game fair, so to speak. They'll never make it completely fair. But the reality is it's our mindset that's preventing us from leveraging some of these tools to benefit us. You'll find that some people greatly benefited. I was in 8A business, right? So I've taken advantage of some of these tools. But, you know, if you don't have the right mindset, it's interesting. The best way to describe this mindset challenge is that they could make the game fair. They could level the income gap, they could level the wealth gap, and white guy would still get rich. The reason is because our mindsets are situated in that we're still dominated by consumerism, by the images that we see on television, by the people that we follow and that we gravitate. And one of the things I was gonna say is that our mindsets are what happens is our trauma infiltrates our culture through our music, through social media, through the ways that we worship, through the people that we follow, through every aspect of our lives, therefore, in a sense, kind of keeping us right where we are. And it's hard to kind of break out of that. So you could add more policy, you could add more money to the problem, but if you don't fix the mindset and the way that you look at money and the way that you treat money and the way that you value money, nothing's ever going to change. And that's why my book, My Wealth Building System, is about first developing a millionaire mindset, which I call the offense. Second, developing millionaire values. People don't talk about values. They talk about mindset. Values is treating your money like a tool to make more money as opposed to treating it like a tool. And the third part is making millionaire money moves, which I consider the playbook. The reality is we're not making millionaire money moves enough or consistently enough to make a difference in our lives financially. The reason why we're not is because our mindset and our value sets are in conflict. And when they're in conflict, we can't do anything consistent because the reality is becoming a millionaire isn't hard. It's just slow. It just takes a long time, consistent effort, consistent investing, and investing intensely as much income as you possibly can. And over time, you get wealthy. It's just that simple. But you can't do it consistently when your mind is constantly vacillating about all these different ideas that prevent you from being consistent with your wealth.
I mean, I love that when you said it's not hard. You know, it sounds counterintuitive,
yeah.
But when you say it's really about consistency, it really makes sense. What's the line, the slow thing and something, I don't know. I shouldn't, you know, that's what they say. Unless you know the quote, never start saying, how does that quote go? And I can't remember, but maybe a caller will tell us. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines before we take a quick break. Ron is calling from Annapolis. Go right ahead, Ron.
Good evening. Thank you for having me, gentlemen. I have a two-part question. House valuations, how is that assessed? Is it based off of the comps in the area? Because I feel as though my house could be appraised a little bit more, but being African-American, I'm just wondering. And my second part is, when you're you have a car loan. Is paying it off a good suggestion, or just keep paying the note?
All right, I'm gonna hold you there, Ron. Stay right on the line. We're gonna let Cedric get to that. We're gonna take a break, and then we're gonna sort of have Cedric address your question when we come back. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Ron, stay right there. Big J, Reggie, we're going to get to you also. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on 96.3 WHUR. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Our guest tonight is Cedric Nash. He's the author of Why Should White Guys Have All the Wealth? How You Can Become a Millionaire Starting from the Bottom. Starting from the bottom. 202-319-7810 is the phone line. You have a question or comment about generating wealth, eliminating debt, all of that good stuff. Cedric is here to help us with that conversation. Cedric, Ron had a question about housing.
You had a question about housing values. Well, mm-hmm. housing values are mostly dependent upon the comparable values of houses around you, but they're very subjective. Theoretically, what they do is they look at a certain amount of houses within your geographic region. They look at their price per square foot, and then they make adjustments based on conditions of your house. And so that is somewhat subjective based on how that appraiser views it. And so that's what we're experiencing, is that in black neighborhoods, you know, you could have the same house that you have in Virginia, made by the same exact builder, and because of comparable values or sale prices may be a little bit lower, that could impact your values. But there is a subjective piece to that, and what they're finding historically are that appraisers, and the study that I'm talking about, it was in the news, where a professor had his house appraised because he wanted to borrow money against it, and he had it appraised, and then he had his white colleague, who was another professor, sit in the house as if it was his house and had it appraised, and the house was appraised, I think, close to $300,000 more than what it was appraised when he was sitting in the house. So there is a subjective piece of that, and you might be African-American living in a white neighborhood, but it's still going to, you know, it still could have an impact on the valuation of your home. And there's a professor out of Emory, I can't recall her name, that did a study on how housing values and how African-American housing values, and if you live in an African-American neighborhood, how the values of those properties could be impacted. My attitude is, I live in a black neighborhood. I'm proud of it. I will always do, because I love my neighbors and I love hanging out with my neighbors. I'm going to invest in their neighborhood, but I'm going to live where I want to live. And so that's just my choice. Your other question is, regarding to paying off your car, you know, the way I talk about it in my book, there's good debt and there's bad debt. And good debt is debt associated with assets that appreciate or generate income. So, for example, if it's an investment property in a single-family home or in an apartment building, in a business, even student loans are considered good debt, because people who go to college and get a college degree have a higher chance of making bigger income than if you don't. Bad debt is debt associated with things that hold no value or depreciate. Credit card debt, furniture debt, you know, auto loans. So typically, unless the car is a really rare antique, an auto loan is a bad piece of debt. So the name of the game is to pay that debt off as quickly as you can. But I want to give that as a caveat, because I had a few articles I posted out there called "Quit Tripping Over Student Loan Debt."
Mm-hmm.
The reason is because a lot of times most Americans and most African Americans were spending most of our lives raising our debt to lower our debt, raising our debt to lowering our debt. We're never investing. And investing is a time game. It's about investing over long periods of time that builds up your, what I call, freedom fund. And so at the sake of not investing, I'm saying don't let your debt go up. Pay it down as aggressively as you can, but by all means, start investing day one. Right? Build a diverse portfolio, do dollar cost averaging by investing small pieces at a time, regardless of what's happening in the market, and invest that over time, year upon year upon year upon year. And if you don't do it, it's almost like you're in a boxing match and all you're doing is rope-a-doping. You can't win the match rope-a-doping. You got to get out to the middle of the floor and throw some power punches because that's what they count. And your investments are your power punches. You got to start investing regularly. That's what's going to make you rich. That's what's going to build up your assets. And that's what's going to create generational wealth because that's what you pass on. You pass on your assets, not your income.
All right, Ron, take that advice and run with it. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
All right, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Cedric, I work a 9-to-5. Man, I'm listening to you. It sounds great. Whew, how do I do all of that that you're talking about when I got to get up and I'm just a 9-to-5-er? Can I do what you're saying I should be doing?
Oh, the answer is absolutely yes, because you only work a 9-to-5. You got 24 hours in a day, right?
Oops.
So yeah. The name of the game is part of the deal, as I talk about in my book, and that's a mindset thing, is grit. You have to accept the fact that if you want to build wealth and if you want to have a higher income than most, you're going to have to put more time into it. There's nobody in this country that makes an enormous amount of money without putting an enormous amount of time in it. And effort is not measured in the number of hours that you work. It's measured in the amount of time required to get your desired results. So you can freelance. I mean, I own salon studios, right? So there are ladies in there braiding hair. I used to get my hair braided when I was a kid. It used to cost $5 or $10. Mm-hmm. Now it's like $300 mm-hmm. to braid your hair.
Mm-hmm.
There are ladies that are doing extensions. You know, some of those jobs are $300, $400, $500. And they're doing it on the weekends. They're doing it on the evenings while they're working their regular government job. In today's technological world, there are so many opportunities to make extra money. There are people that are licensed social workers that can do therapy from their home off their computer and make $150, $160 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
The whole point is if you're fired up about building wealth and if you're willing to put in the work, make the necessary sacrifices, I don't care what color you are, I don't care who you are, you can build wealth.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Building wealth, specifically within the black community. That's our focus tonight. Phone lines are still open. Let's go back to the phone lines. Reggie calling from the district. Go right ahead, Reggie, with your question or comment.
I just have a comment. Mm-hmm. Hey, Cedric, this is Reggie. I used to be your accountant at Oakland a couple years ago.
I know you are, boy.
Hey, I want to say, again, I got your book early January. Again, still reading it. Just want to let the callers know that Cedric is definitely legit, the real deal. He's not a selfish, and he's sharing his information and knowledge basically to empower all of us. And, again, I definitely worked with him firsthand for years. Again, right now I know what I'm reading in your book is basically it's having a discipline. And in regards to your spending and understanding where you're actually spending your money and having more so spending has to deal with a lot of emotional, I guess, for lack of a better term, just gratification. And again, I think the hard part for me is trying to disassociate that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, what do you recommend on that? Because, again, I'm trying to kind of follow your footsteps and your guidelines just to improve my situation and obtain wealth.
Great question, Reggie. I think we all kind of have mm-hmm. that, right? Sort of that impulse of what mm-hmm. you like to spend money on and should you be spending money on those things and how to discipline ourselves to redirect our funds in the right place.
Yeah, the major theme of my book is really not about discipline because I think that discipline is forced, right?
Okay.
It's really about values, right? Let me give you this example. Your money outcomes are the result of your money behaviors. Your money behaviors are the shadow to the things that you value and prioritize. If you change your values and your prioritization, you're going to change your behaviors, right? You change your behaviors, the outcomes automatically come. And so that was really the major theme of my book. So then you say, well, how did I change my values? Well, it has a lot to do with who you hang out with. Show me your friends, I'll show you your future. If you want to soar like eagles, you can't hang with turkeys.
Mm-hmm.
So the name of the game is when you hang out with millionaire mentors, when you hang out with investors, not shoppers, now all of a sudden you have a propensity to want to invest, to want to learn. Change your conversation, you change your destination. The other thing is you have to change your programming by what you read, by what you enter into your mind by what you watch on television. All these things matter. If you think about it, marketers are constantly trying to get to your subconscious, because if you don't put a plan into your subconscious, now you're going to follow millionaires and billionaires' plans. Because
so should we be watching Shark Tank, CNBC, anything that...
Those are the things, like Shark Tank and CNBC, right. Those types of things. I mean, if you look, it's so funny because a lot of young people that I mentor ask about, you know, getting capital for their business. I said, what have you noticed on Shark Tank? They ask you, how much does it cost to make one widget? And how much profit are you making? Do you know that they had to already start the business before they could go on Shark Tank? They already had to have a model. So now they're getting capital to expand that model. So the reality is that you got to get that money from saving. You got to get that money from saving and investing so that you can put into your business. But the name of the game is, like you said, you change your environment, change your practices, change the your programming, what you put into your mind, and then change your practices. And over time, you cement a new mindset, and you're locked in. And it's not about discipline. Now you're working in one with your values, right? So I came up with that because I never really, since college, I was always like this. I always wanted to save. I always wanted to invest because I had four millionaire mentors, three black, one white, that poured a lot into me. And I saw what they did, and I basically built a blueprint based on what they were doing. And so I said, how am I going to take this $36,400 check as a software engineer and turn it into assets and turn it into millions? And so that's what my book is about. It's about creating that blueprint so that you can turn your paycheck into assets so that your assets do the work for you. And so I think, Reggie, you are on that transition. And the final thing I want to say is that, you know, you could read my book and you still may not change. And Tony Robbins says this, and it's pretty powerful, because your breakthrough can happen in a moment, but it could take years for that moment to happen. But when that breakthrough happens, and that, what I mean by a breakthrough, that is a newfound passion or a newfound desire for something, for a different state. When that happens, and it happened to me, I talk about it in my book, when that happens, now you're so focused that it's not discipline, because you don't see what you're sacrificing, right? You don't see what you're giving up. You're focusing on the foundation that you're putting in place. And I'm telling you, it happened to me in 2003. I was always good, but I turned it on in 2003 when I bought my office building, my first apartment building. I actually own one right on the corner from here at Howard University. I was just on a tear, and I didn't care about clothes. I didn't care about having a new Range Rover or updating my Porsche or those kinds of things. And that's what happens, is this breakthrough that has to happen. And until that happens, you're going to struggle. But once it happens, you won't struggle with those things.
All right, Reggie, you're on your way.
Thanks, Patrick. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you soon, sir.
Thank you, my brother. All right.
Thank you for calling, Reggie. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Big J, we're going to get to you in a second. I wanted to ask you this, Cedric. What if folks are listening, right, and they're just starting from that bottom and they're thinking, okay, mindset, values, but what should I be investing in? I've heard Warren Buffett say, find the things maybe that you buy, the things that you're interested in. Should I be looking at securities? I mean, where do I go, Cedric? How do I start? I know you were an engineer. You ended up getting your MBA. And so what do I do?
Well, you know, it's funny that, you know, I love these questions, because in my book, in chapter 7, subchapter 7, 7.8, I talk about, 7.6, I talk about investing, because this is a common question. And I created this thing called an investment ladder. And the investment ladder tells you that starting from zero, the first thing is to get to $1,000. And once you get to $1,000, you can invest in index funds. You can invest in ETFs, mutual funds, individual stocks, until you get up to the 25,000 level. Once you get between 25 and 50,000, you can look at single family homes. You could still look at index funds.
But to learn all that, Cedric, do I need to contact you? Do I need to pay you for the services to help guide me there? Or do I get a book? Do I get your book and learn it? Can I do it on my own?
Well, first,
should I do it on my own?
Yes, you can. The reality is, it doesn't really matter what you invest in, as long as it's quality. As long as it's quality companies. I'll give you an example of a quality company. I love Apple. I'm not telling you to buy it, but I love it. Why do I like Apple? Because Apple has more cash on their books than Elon Musk's net worth, right? Loads of cash. So I like companies that their competitors won't beat them, because either they're going to beat their competitors or they're going to buy them, right? So they're never going to lose. And they give dividends too. So it's really not that complicated. I like companies like Johnson & Johnson. Right? They give dividends. So their stock may not jump up like crazy, but you're giving a dividend and they're giving you more stocks.
So what does that mean to the layman person?
So a dividend is when every time a company has a quarterly profit, they decide to share a piece of that profit with their shareholders, people who own their shares of stocks. And so depending on the number of shares that you have, you'll get a dividend. And they give like maybe a 2 or 3% dividend yield.
Now, that's not real. That's not,
it's real money.
They're sending you a check?
You have an option to reinvest it in stock or actually get a check. And there's actually people who retire off of dividends. They build up their capital to the point where the dividends give them enough money to support their lifestyle, and they never touch their base.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole point is like there are things called dividend aristocrats. These are companies that for the past 25 years have always increased their how much dividend they give out, right? AT&T is one of them, or they used to be one of them. But, you know, McDonald's is one of them. So the whole point is that I'm trying to simplify what investing is about. But if you want even more help, Charles Schwab is one of my favorite investment companies because they have this thing called the Schwab Starter Kit. And for $50, you can open up an account and they will match it with $101 and they'll give you a slice of the S&P 500, which is the largest 500 companies that are traded on the market. And then all of that, they have a hotline, 24/7 hotline that you can call and ask any question that you want. They have videos and instruction videos designed to teach you how to invest. The name of the game is to get started.
Get in.
And not worry about making a mistake because you're going to do this over time, right? You're not doing this just to make enough money to go buy Gucci. You're doing this because this is your freedom fund. This is your generational wealth fund. And so the name of the game is to get started. There's really no mistakes because really what happens is you have to catch the market, right? It's a matter of catching the market as it grows. Like advisors, people think that advisors have a magic wand. The reality is when the market's not doing well, the advice they give you still doesn't really help you that much. But when the market's doing well, they look like rock stars. The reality is that if you look at the market since the 1920s, it's always gone up. The worst time was in the 1930s, which was the Great Recession. A Great Depression. And if you look at the Great Recession, it really wasn't that bad in 2008, and it only lasted about 18 months. So it's about investing consistently, regularly, and basically picking up some books and learning slowly like a brand new language, and eventually it will come to you.
202-319-7810. Our guest tonight is Cedric Nash, author of Why Should White Guys Have All of the Wealth? How You Can Become a Millionaire Starting from the Bottom. Let's go back to the phone lines. Big J has been waiting patiently. Big J, what's your question or comment?
Yeah, good evening. It's so very, very disturbing. I hear this comment. I'm so very, very happy. And then WHUR always give me hope to speak out. I'm a real, real guy who lost two houses in less than 4 months. I just received a call. Are you black? I say, yes, I am. They make me lose a job. They send me to criminal jail by mistake for 10 days. Make me lose everything. But only WHUR and DC government give me a lot of hope to be strong, to beat my depression, anxiety, to try to have some more help. I would like to be connected to him. If we can have his contact, we will connect to him.
Sure.
And he can help us. He can help us to back up from negative again to top.
All right. Well, Big J, let me do you want to give that at the end of the broadcast or you want to give it now, Cedric?
That's fine. But since he's on the phone, you can go to cedricnash.com, and that's my website. And I actually have a free growth challenge where I teach people for free how to build wealth. And it's a Zoom mentoring session that I have every other Monday. We get on the phone and we talk about ways to build wealth. So,
and he can find out all that information on CedricNash.com.
Yeah, I have free forms and documents and spreadsheets that accompany my book to kind of teach you basically how to put together your wealth plan.
All right, Big J, Cedric Nash, C as in cat, E-D-R-I-C, Nash, N-A-S-H.com. Thank you so much, Big J, for calling, and best of luck as you move forward. All right, I think we lost him. Cedric, I wanted to ask you this. Page one of your book, Introduction. It doesn't matter how much money you make. If you can't manage a little bit of money, you won't be able to manage a lot of money. Rosa A. Nash. Who wrote that wisdom-packed short ditty, and who was Rosa A. Nash?
That was my mother. My mother died in 1984 of breast cancer, but she had a lot of wisdom. My mother only had an eighth grade education. She was from Danville, Virginia, and she grew up at a time where, you know, going to school beyond eighth grade was not necessary if you needed to go work and help, you know, with the family. And although she only had an eighth grade education, she was just very, very knowledgeable and very, very inspirational. And she was a saver. She was like, you know, like I said, my mother saved coins. If you go to my house, I said, if somebody breaks in my house, all they're going to get is a 5-gallon bottle of nickels and dimes and quarters and pennies, because I kind of adopted that same thing. You know, so she was just an amazing saver, very, very inspirational. So I had to open my book with that quote, because I'll never forget that quote that she told me. And it's just so true. If you can't manage a little bit of money, you won't be able to manage a lot of money. And that's what we find in our athletes. They get loads of cash, millions of dollars, and it just goes away so quickly. Like 70, 78% of NFL players retire broke two years after retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And so people wonder, well, why does that happen? This is why the mindset is so important. It's because they never developed the right mindset. And because they didn't develop the right mindset, putting more money on that problem makes it worse. It's like pouring gasoline on an open fire. And then now they have the trauma and the things that they have to deal with their own family, and they just don't have the tools to manage it. And that's why you start with mindset, you start with value set, and then you pour the money on top of it.
I know you mentioned, and I know it's in your book, you also talk about real estate. You've mentioned how you've invested in real estate. Recently, and I'm sure you probably know this because you're from the Golden State, the beach property that was, I think it was Manhattan Beach in California,
mm-hmm.
and the family, I can't remember their last name, but the original owners, black family, had made it a little beach resort. It was at Manhattan Beach, and then the city of Los Angeles decided they wanted that property.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically took it from them. And now, 100 years later, the family, the city finally decided, you know what, we need to do the right thing. They give the property back. I can't remember how much it was worth.
Yeah.
But the family decided to then sell it back to the city. And I saw an article maybe about a week ago. I saw the headline, but I didn't click on it to read all of it. And in general, it was about, okay, this family got it back, but then they sold it back to the mm-hmm. city. Is that part of our problem? We get the property and then we sell it back. Talk to me about that. Did they do, in your opinion, the right thing because the value had gone up so much, and mm-hmm. maybe they felt like, well, you know, we're not going to put another resort here. We could just hold on to it, but what's the point? What say you about that and sort of the tenor of that article, thinking you got black wealth, now you gave it away, oh, yeah. even though they got a return on the property.
You know, my thing is that I can't weigh in as to whether or not they did the right thing or mm-hmm. the wrong thing, but I do know how I would have evaluated it. Okay. I would have looked at what kind of income can I get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times we're so focused on getting a big sum of money, as opposed to saying I can get income for my lifetime, for my family's lifetime. And sometimes that income could be so significant that I could do whatever I want with that income.
Because I think that's what it was. I think the city was paying them something like every year
mm-hmm.
to be able to still use the property, almost like right. they were renting it to the city. And then exactly. they finally decided, you know, we'll just go ahead and sell it.
Exactly. Now, I personally would have taken the income stream. And mm-hmm. I would have, you know, because that gives me time to figure out really what's the best value of it. And so that's, you know, that whole millionaire mindset thing, that's what that's about. And that's where I had the benefit of having millionaire mentors that I can bounce ideas off of and say, should I go this way or should I go that way? And so that's why it's so important to have such mentors like that. And hopefully they would have had a mentor like that would have helped them evaluate that and make the best decision for them and their family. But, you know, all too often, you know, you see here in D.C., you know, D.C., a lot of black families owned all these beautiful properties right around here.
Oh, yeah.
And Howard, and they sold them, and they, you know, fortunately, hopefully they bought bigger homes or better homes,
mm-hmm.
but they lost value. And the reality is we've got to hold on to that. I own one right around the corner, and I'm not selling it unless I can get something else in the city that's of equal or better value in the future. So mm-hmm. we have to learn how to evaluate those things and make those decisions accordingly. But, you know, the reason why I say that is because you can have loads of capital, but it's hard to get income from it, right? Income is challenging to get without having to work for it. right? So yeah, you can go invest in a business, but that takes a certain amount of effort and labor for you to make sure that business is successful.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have real estate, one thing that's attractive about it is that it's not a whole lot of work to collect rents and to maintain property. It's a lot of work to hire a whole bunch of employees,
mm-hmm.
right? But you know, so I would have evaluated the income value or the income opportunities of that property and made a decision based on that. Sometimes it's difficult because you have so many different family factions that are driving various mm-hmm. things. But I'm of the mindset that if my brothers and sisters don't act right, I'm buying them out.
I'll buy them out. That's a whole other conversation. If my mother was listening, we can talk about that afterwards because I was trying to get her to do that with a piece of property down in Louisiana. But anyway, the title of your book, Why Should White Guys Have All the Wealth? And then the subtitle, How You Can Become a Millionaire Starting from the Bottom. You, and part of in your acknowledgments in your opening page, you mention Reginald Lewis, the late African-American entrepreneur. And your title of your book is kind of tied to that. Is that why you thanked him, not only because of the title of the book, or did your title also was paying homage to him? Talk a little bit about that.
It was actually both. I never got a chance to meet him, but I read his book, mm-hmm. and I followed him even until his death. I'll never forget 1993 when he died. I was in Philadelphia taking a class, and I saw it in the USA Today that he died of brain cancer. And he was just such an incredible figure. And his book was just so amazing. Ironically, I got a chance to meet the ghostwriter who actually wrote the book, and he lives in Miami, right? Kind of amazing that I ran into to Blair. But what's interesting is that, you know, Reginald Lewis really showed African Americans what was possible in business by building a billion-dollar enterprise, you know, in Beatrice Foods. And so I was having a conversation with a friend of mine and going on my rant about the book, and you know, and I was saying, why should only white people be getting rich in America? And that's why I started playing with that, and that's why I said, ooh, I like that title. But then I pulled back off of it because using that title is just like singing the national anthem after Whitney Houston, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like you can't touch a great thing. But after a while, I talked to my ghostwriter and various people. My family didn't like it. They thought it was too controversial. But I loved it because and more and more African Americans I talked to loved the boldness of it. And all we're doing is stating the obvious. The reality is 84% of the wealth is in their hands. And the reality is they shouldn't have all the wealth. We can have it too, despite the odds. And that's what the book is about.
You talked about having mentors. Three were black, one was white. I mentioned your background, educationally an engineer. Mm-hmm. Then you went on to get your MBA. So you were, you know, numbers guy. Engineers is just, my son is interested in that. It's so far beyond my humanities, liberal arts background. But how important is it specifically, right, for the black community to find mentors like yourself to help guide them? And how important was that for you?
It means everything. It means everything. And the reality is that we've got loads of mentors in our community. And here in the DMV, they are everywhere. We have the most incredible entrepreneurs here in every aspect of business, and they're open and willing to mentor you if you're willing to put in the work. And so it means everything, because that's where the mindset shift happens. People say, well, you say change your mindset. That sounds very convoluted. Well, how do you do it? Well, you get a mentor and you spend time with that mentor and you bounce your ideas with them, and they'll start shaping the way that you think about things and the way that you process things. And then after a while, you'll get it. And that's what happened with me. I got it. I understood it. So now I don't rely on them as much. In some ways, I'm helping them evaluate some of their deals because I know some of the newer tools and the newer ways of looking at things, because some of them are in their 90s. But it meant everything in terms of inspiration, in terms of when I had troubles, going back to them and bouncing the idea about how do I deal with this. One word of advice I'm going to give you, often your mentors are going to give you advice and you're not going to believe it. You're not going to think it makes sense and you're going to doubt it. But I'm telling you, and I say this in the book, try it. Try it first, because you'll realize that they have a wealth of knowledge and experience and insight that you don't have. And that's why they are where they are. And so I had one mentor I talk about in my book who told me to go into government contracting. And I was like, oh, they pay slow. Mm-hmm. Oh, it doesn't make sense. Well, after doing $90 million in federal government contracting business, he was right.
So in our final moments, what do you have going on? What's coming up? How can folks get the book?
Yeah, so you can get the book on Amazon or go to my website at cetrudash.com. I actually have an investment supplement that talks about my investment strategies, which is the Millionaire Money Moves Investment Supplemental Guide. I have a book signing happening at the Bowie Performing Arts tomorrow night. It's free. You can go on my website and just come out tomorrow night. I think it starts at about 6:30 or something like that.
Is it seven to nine?
I think it might be
six to nine. Okay.
6 to 9 at Bowie Performing Arts. I will have books there if you want to buy them. If you have your books, bring them out. I'll sign them. We're going to have this incredible conversation about igniting your personal wealth journey. And I'm fired up about black wealth, so get ready.
You have another black summit somewhere.
We got a black wealth summit coming up.
You know I got to be there for the next one.
We have a black wealth summit coming up in October here in Maryland. We're also looking at a Juneteenth event with City of Praise, with Bishop Joel Peebles, who is our ordained minister for the Black Wealth Summit, who fires us up and closes us out. So he's been so gracious to work with us, and we look forward to continue to work with him.
He is Cedric Nash, author of Why Should White Guys Have All of the Wealth? How You Can Become a Millionaire Starting from the Bottom. That is just really one of his titles. He's a financial advisor. He's a financial investor. He's a mentor. What else am I missing? He's an engineer, as I mentioned. He's got an MBA. What else? Anything else that I'm missing, Cedric?
I think you got it covered. Yeah, Black Wealth Summit. Yep, I'm founder of the Black Wealth Summit.
That's right. He's got a lot going on. Cedric, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge. Your wealth of knowledge, by the way. We appreciate always having you in.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, February 22nd. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.